Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Happy Friday. Welcome into Sabres Live. Joe Yurden is in for Marty Baron on this day, and we have a lot to get to, Joe, as we follow the path, perhaps, of the Mercury rising this weekend, in this late summer weekend. We will look and see whether teams in the Eastern Conference are also going to be on the rise, or might they dip? Now, you know the length of the average first segment here on Sabres Live, so when you're trying to get through all the Eastern Conference teams, we're going to have to channel our inner Marty and talk rather quickly today. We should start at the top with Florida. 110 points, Stanley Cup win, elite team the last 5 years. They've suffered a few losses. Will they go up or down this regular season?
I think they go a little bit down. Just because they didn't, again, you don't have anybody to replace Brandon Montour. That's tough. The forward depth takes a little bit of a hit, but their elite players are all still there. They're at the point now where you can't really deny them. Like, they're still going to be really good, but I don't know, maybe 105 points as opposed to 110.
I think that's fair. I think the business side of it that they took care of with Reinhardt was amazing and just impactful for the long term for them. Yeah, they lose Oliver Ekman-Larsson and Stenlin and Tarasenko and Lomberg. Stolarz might be one of the more interesting losses to watch, though, as whether Spencer Knight comes in and is able to, or Chris Drieger, you know, with Bob. What do you think? What should we expect from Bob now that he's scaled the mountain?
You know, I think Bob's what he is now. I think we kind of get what he's going to be. There's going to be those fits and starts with him where there's going to be like a cold streak in the middle of the year where you're like, I don't know if this guy's still got it. It's going to be pretty tough. And then he goes nuclear for 2 months and you're like, oh, right. There's the guy that won a cup now and won a couple of Vezinas. Yeah. I mean, it'll get sketchy sometimes with him, but I don't have any real reason to doubt him. He is who he is now. He's what, 37 now? Oh my God.
Oh my gosh. Is he that old? He's not that old.
Is he? I don't know. Listen,
hang on.
The ages get fuzzy now because I get lost, but he's
35.
35. Okay. All right. Yeah. That feels a little bit better.
But speaking of goaltending, Boston has had the dynamic duo. One of them remains unsigned. One of them finds himself in Ottawa. They've added Zadorov. They've added Lindholm on the heels of 108 points. But despite being the best regular season team in the NHL for 60 years, the Bruins, once again, did not get as far as they would have liked. What should we expect from Boston?
You know, I didn't like the Lindholm signing. I was very down on him. When he went to Vancouver and during the playoffs and the whole thing, I just didn't like the way he played. He's a good player. I mean, we've seen in the past with Calgary and Carolina, he's can be really good, but I don't know. But Boston's got a weird black magic to him where things just work for him. You know, every time you're just like, I don't know if that's good. I don't know. This is the time. They're going to go down. They're going to drop. And then they don't. But to me, the big guy that's going to come back for him is Matt Poitras. He was so good last year as a rookie, and you know, he gets hurt, he misses the rest of the season. He's going to be back. I think he's going to be really good. That's going to solve a lot of the middle of the ice problems for him, which weren't really problems last year. But you lose him, you lose DeBrusk, you lose, you get Lindholm back. Zadorov's gonna become a cult hero in Boston the second he lays out like Austin Matthews or somebody, or he starts face washing somebody. So I think Boston's gonna be about neutral. They should dip. We've been saying it for 10 years now. They're gonna dip, but they never dip. It just works. And
yeah, so, I mean, obviously
done, and they'll be fine.
There was a dip last year only because the previous year was record setting, but it's hard to imagine them dipping much below the 108, maybe a couple of points. Toronto wasn't far behind at 102. Toronto, since Matthews came in to the league, has been in the playoffs every year. They've added some on the blue line. They have not had anywhere near the playoff success to reflect how good they've been in regular seasons in the last half dozen years. What do we make of the Leafs? Up, down, same?
They're going to be good because the offensive talent is that good. You know, Nylander's great. Marner's great. I know it's a contract year for Marner, so who knows what he's gonna put up. That's gonna be dramatic. It's dramatic in Toronto no matter what, but that's gonna be really dramatic with Marner. Matthews is incredible. The defensive ads are good. Tanev,
yeah,
I think there's a cliff coming for him, but he's really good still. Ekman-Larsson was great. Getting Stolarz is a big one for him because Joe Wall's gonna need some backup there. I know they love him, but Wall's gonna need the backup because he can't stay healthy. He's a great goalie, but boy, oh boy, can he struggle to stay in the lineup. They're going to be, I think they're going to be up a little bit, but it always seems really fraught for them where it's one issue away from completely falling in on itself.
Perhaps the most fascinating and least talked about would be Tampa. They made it again. They had 98 points. They've been there 10 of 11. We all know the finals trips and the cup success in back-to-back years, but they actually added Jake Guentzel. Like, this is amazing. Not many teams can brag about this. However, while also bringing in a established, familiar presence in Ryan McDonagh and lesser on the blue line, JJ Moser, they are starting life without Stamkos and Sergachev. What do we expect from the Lightning?
I think the Lightning are going to be very good. I don't like the way things happen with Stamkos. I thought that was boiling over for a year. Hated the way that happened. Trading Sergachev, while stunning, seemed like that was maybe on the horizon. It all depended on like what Victor Hedman's future was going to be. And he's going to be a Lightning for life. So like that's done. But Sergachev was a number one style defenseman. And he wasn't getting any of that responsibility in Tampa. So I get why that trade happens. But JJ Moser's really good.
Yes.
He's not Sergachev good. Like, let's be real here, but he's going to shine in Tampa. He's going to be fantastic there. And people are going to be like, wow, this guy's really good. Where'd he come from? Well, he came out of Arizona. So go figure. But Vasilevsky.
Last of the desert dogs.
Right. So, but like Vasilevsky had such a weird year last year, mostly down, but like coming back from the back surgery and all that stuff. I think he's going to be back to his old self next season. Like, there's so much about them where it's like, I don't know what's going on with this team, but I think Tampa's going to be really good and they're going to be right back there. And people are going to be like, geez, I thought these guys were going to go fade somewhere.
Interesting depth on the Lightning that will play itself out over time as far as the competition among its bottom six. The Red Wings were this close, just like the Sabres the year before, that 91 points, and it wasn't enough. It was enough to get them tied for the final spot, but they couldn't win the tiebreaker. So they've had 8 straight years out of the playoffs. Kane and Tarasenko are together again. This time it's in the Motor City. They have a 3-goalie monster to start the year in Husso and Talbot and Lyon. And they still need to sign a couple of key pieces.
Yeah, they got to get Lucas Raymond and Moritz Seider. They have to get their contracts done. They're going to get it done at some point. I don't like the way Detroit sets up at all. I know Cam Talbot had a nice year last year. Bounced back pretty strong after his tough year in Ottawa. He's as tough and dogged as they get. And Alex Lyon's very good. They didn't upgrade in the areas they really needed to upgrade. We're going to see how Simon Edmondson does on defense. I'm really interested to see what he is because the hype with him was that he's a big bruiser, tough guy on defense, really physical. And the games I watched of him, he wasn't any of that. He was a puck mover, did all that, which, hey, they need that too. They lost Shane Gostisbehere, had a great year for them last year, and he's gone. So they're going to need Eric Gustafson to kind of fill that role, and he's not quite as good as Shane Gostisbehere when it comes to that stuff. I don't know that they upgraded their forwards well enough. They've got lots of like young guys and prospects that could jump into the fire, but I don't know. I think they're in the fight for the wild card all year, but I don't know that they really improved all that much.
What about the Sabres, who were 7 points behind Detroit? They, of course, had 91 in the previous season. We talk all the time about the changes they've made this offseason, so we can probably be brief on this, but the biggest change, obviously, is Lindy.
Yeah, I think they improve, but it's because last year was so down. Because last year was such a drag back to being average last season. They're going to be better. Because the areas that they were really weak in last year, they went out and improved those in the offseason because, you know, the bottom six had to be better and faster. They did that. Lindy's going to be is if he doesn't figure it out, there's a lot more questions to answer here. But I think Lindy knows how to get the job done coaching wise. Lukanen's got the confidence that I think everybody's been waiting for him to have. He looks great. Looked great last season. I don't worry about goaltending at all, which is an amazing thing to say finally about the Sabres. How the offense kind of fills the Jeff Skinner void is going to be interesting, but I think healthy Quinn, I think Zucker's a solid addition. But like, man, Jack Quinn being healthy is going to change a lot of that, because he was so good when he played last year. It's just that, you know, the injuries were so mean to him.
100%. There were three coaching changes in the Atlantic. Toronto, of course, with Berube, Lindy Ruff coming back here in Buffalo, and Ottawa with Travis Green. Green's stint in New Jersey, ill-fated, as it turned out. Ottawa has missed seven straight years. They desperately need full health, especially in the form of Josh Norris. It remains to be seen whether that happens. They've brought in David Perron. They brought in Michael Amadio. They'll get a full year of Shane Pinto. Chychrun's not on the blue line anymore, and they got a Vezina winner for free. That's basically what the question is among the many. Like, Linus Ullmark has never played 50 games in a regular season. Can he play 60 for Ottawa? And is that what needs to happen?
We're going to find out, aren't we? I don't imagine Ottawa is too gung-ho to have Anton Forsberg play as many games as he was, you know, as he ended up playing last year. I think, I don't know. I mean, it's a contract year for Linus, so there's a good enough motivation for him to play 60 and to be great. I know it always feels a little dicey with him and a little bit like, let's see how it goes. But he plays solid. It seemed like a lot of the games that he lost last year in Boston last year, especially postseason, team didn't score for him, which could be an issue in Ottawa too. Yeah. Because the offense
shouldn't be though.
Shouldn't
in
be.
In theory,
no.
Right?
Yeah. Right. Because they've got guys. I mean, there's guys there. I mean, plenty of guys that can score. But I think they're going to be a team that's going to try to do it a little Florida like, where they're going to annoy the garbage out of everybody. You know, Perron drives people crazy. Amadio plays a great, hard, straight line game. Mm-hmm. He's not like a pest or any of that stuff, but he just goes hard every shift. He was a guy that I was hoping Buffalo was going to sniff around at too. Mm-hmm. But I think those are solid additions, but yeah, they got to be healthy. They have to stay healthy. Shabbat missed so much time last year.
Yeah. Recent years. It's
want to see Sanderson take a step, take another step. So yeah, we'll see. But I don't know. They were a team that was, again, they were so down last year. I see them coming up, but I don't know if it's playoff level.
Agreed. They did have a dip last year to 78, which was barely ahead of Montreal at 76, who finished last in the Atlantic for a third straight year. They lucked out probably at the draft. They might have lucked out with Patrick Laine and it not costing them anything. They'll get, let's assume, a full year from Lane Hudson, which could be fun to watch, and a healthy Kirby Doc. What should we see from Montreal now that they appear more stable than before?
Yeah, they'll be better. They're on a very, like, it's a rebuild, and it's a very, like, slow playing out rebuild, and it's a slow incline up the mountain for them. And it's such a competitive conference and division that it's hard to gain ground. I think we know that very well in Buffalo. It's tough to find a way to get up the hill, but a full year of Cole Caulfield not being injured, that's going to be a big help. That's another team that needs to just be healthy. You know, Caden Gooley missed a lot of time last year with injuries. You know, Nick Suzuki had to, like, kind of hold everything together all year long. It's such an odd mix because it's really young. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of really young guys there, and the veterans they have, it feels like the clock's kind of ticking on them. Like, you're waiting for them to either get traded or just be like, all right, that's enough. You know, Josh Anderson, Savard, like those guys. But the young guys they have are really interesting. I'm very curious about Hudson because he's such a small player, and he's a defenseman too, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he's a very diminutive defenseman, and that doesn't always work in the NHL, but his skill, his speed, and his creativity could change the game completely.
It could.
It's very tough to say that, like, this is going to be a mind-blowing year for them. They're going to be better. They've been a pain to play since Marty St. Louis took over. So I like the setup, but I don't know. It's really difficult.
Trending up or down, we're rapid fire through the East today, and it's hard to imagine that many are going the wrong way at this point in time, which by the end of this exercise in 10 minutes, you might see, a projection as to what it will take to make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. Let's rattle through the Metro. The Rangers had a franchise best 114 points last year, but it didn't get them what they wanted. They're basically rolling back a very similar lineup with an addition of Riley Smith. Real quick on the Rangers, up, down.
Slightly down. I think the Smith addition's good because I think he wasn't the right fit in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. And it just didn't work. Didn't work from the beginning. They needed somebody to kind of step in there, with the kind of Blake Wheeler sort of spot there. They just needed another veteran guy in the wing to help out. So I think that'll work. The Trouba situation is, I don't know. Everybody's playing it cool. Everybody's being nice about it. Like they were ready to move him out, and then it didn't happen. And now everybody's like, no, we're pros. We'll get it going here. But the first suspension, first misplay, the fans are going to be all over them. It's going to be ugly. But they're still stupid deep, stupid good. Shesterkin's arguably the best goalie in the league. They're going to be awesome. They're going to be really good. But President's Trophy again, probably not. But they'll be fine.
The Canes were 3 points behind at 111, and it could be argued that no team has undergone more change from where they were in the middle of last season to where they are now. Are they going up or down?
I don't. Something about Carolina doesn't really sit well with me. The overall talent's obviously good. Aho is fantastic. But a lot of the makeup, they lose Pesci. You lose Teravainen. You're losing some
Brady Shea.
Brady Shea. That's two big defensemen I'll be losing. Mm-hmm. Like, that's two guys out of your top four. I think they're coming back a bit. And the goaltending always seems to be up in the air. I think, Kochetkov's the guy, but, like, they haven't handed the keys to him. I think finally that happens this year. But I don't know. I think that, the East is so competitive. There's going to be some teams that slip down and that come back to the pack that maybe we don't expect. I think Carolina might be it. They've been supposed to be knocking on the door to get to the Stanley Cup final for 4 or 5 years now.
Yeah.
They just don't get it done. And
no.
if they were in a bigger market, there'd be a ton of pressure.
They kept their coach, though, and they've been to the playoffs every year under Brendan Moore. It'll be interesting to see whether they can overcome, and not to mention, they've got to get Seth Jarvis's deal done. And then what will that mean? But any team that signs Will Carrier for 6 years, I'm willing to give them a tip of the cap. Yeah. The Islanders at 94 points, and the Islanders have made the playoffs 5 of the last 6 years. They haven't changed a lot, but we get a full year of Patrick Waugh behind the bench.
Yeah. And I like that Patrick Waugh doesn't exactly play the classic sort of Lou Lamoriello, grind it up, grind everybody down, wear everybody out kind of hockey. Like, Patrick's gonna do things his way. It's a little bit like that, but it's opened up a little bit more. There's some good offensive parts there. I like the addition of Duclair. I think that was a smart ad for them. And besides, there might be four other signings for them before camp even opens, because Lou, keeps everything under lock and key. I mean, who knows? But with them, I don't think they've lost too much. I mean, they lost a couple of really tough guys with Martin and Clutterbuck, but they've already found a couple of guys that can replace that sort of action lower the lineup. But there's really good parts. Noah Dobson's a great defenseman. Their goaltending is fantastic. They got to stop messing around with Ilya Sorokin, though. Like, I don't know what happened there at the end of the season in the playoffs, where Varlamov was the guy to go with, but that seems to be that's Patrick's honeypot right there with goaltending. So they'll be the same.
I think it
feels like a cop out to say like push.
No,
they're about the same.
They fit that they kind of fit that profile, and it's allowed them to make it in 5 of the last 6 years. The Capitals have made it in 9 of the last 10 and 15 of 17, and did so unexpectedly last year with a new coach and a different number one goaltender. Real quick on the Caps, 91, up, down, in, out.
I think with Carol, believing that Carolina is slipping back, I think Washington's the one that kind of, that steals those points. I mean,
interesting.
They kind of stole their way through it last year. Like all last season, I kept saying this is a phony team. They're gonna crash. They're gonna collapse. It's gonna be ugly. They're, you know, the old parts. They can't get it done. They kept getting it done, and now they're a lot better. Like they addressed all of those concerns in the offseason and said, you know what? We need to be a lot better here. I don't know if the Dubois trade is going to necessarily work out for him, but they got Strom to work out really well for them there. They saved his career, and he became a really great player for him. Adding Matt Roy was a great addition. That guy is defense personified right there, and they needed that help on the blue line. I think the Caps are going to be a very difficult team, and plus, you got Ovi going for the record, and he was so bad for 3/4 of the season. He might get it done this year.
Dana Goldman's coming up at the bottom of the hour. Joe Yurden's with us right now. Marty's off today. The Penguins made a move yesterday that we'll go deeper in to detail with Shayna. But the Penguins missed for a second straight year last year, and as of right now, the coach has remained in place, despite a little bit of speculation on that front at the end of the season. What should we expect from the Penguins?
You know, Sid was so good last year, and I don't know how much longer you can expect him and Malkin
contract here.
And Carlson. Yeah, it's, I mean, listen, it's been a long time since Sid had a contract year, and he didn't have to worry about it last time. He doesn't have to worry about it now. Pittsburgh's going to re-sign him, but you know, if he sees the ship sinking, I can't imagine him leaving. But this has been a very slow crash to earth for Pittsburgh. And the last 2 years of missing the playoffs, where it's like they were that close, just missed out. The floor's falling out from under them at one of these years. And it might be this year. I don't like a lot of the moves. They have no depth. They have no prospect help. No, I mean, Braden Yeager is a really good one. McGroarty might make the lineup this year. They've made some additions. It's basically just they're trying to tread water, it feels like. And they're going to be battling for a wild card, but I don't like the setup there at all.
Byproduct of the success they've had, as we all know. Philadelphia has not had that success, of course, in recent memory. 4 straight misses, but they ascended to 87 points last year. Could have been higher if they'd really committed to perhaps finishing as a competitor as opposed to a seller at the deadline. But anyway, Michkov is the shiny new toy. What should we expect from Philly?
I think they'll be a little bit better because that was a learning thing last year. They played way over their heads, but that's because Torts got the best out of them. I think Torts might have learned a lesson, though, by riding him as hard as he did for the first 3/4 of the season, because they were out of gas at the end of the year. Like they just didn't have anything left. He had injuries, he had all kinds of stuff. You know, they didn't have Risto all year, which, you know, some people say that was probably helped them out. But it's tough to take a guy like that out of the lineup when he's played well for them, which he has. But I think adding Michkov is going to be fun. That's going to make the Flyers fans all kinds of fired up there. They didn't make any big moves. They weren't very bold about anything. They're just kind of plugging along with it, but it might work for them because Torts knows what he's got. He's got his guys. And I think they all understand the mission and what they're going to be doing and what they're getting into. So I think they'll be a little bit better. Okay. Goaltending's going to be, could be an issue, but Erson, I don't know. Every time Erson plays the Sabres, he looks like Bernie Perron. So
that's true, and that's an unfortunate reference. yes. New Jersey had 81 points. They were our team of the day the other day, so we've dissected them in all directions. You have to assume they are trending up again, right?
Way up, way up. I loved every move they made. Player-wise was great. Criticisms I had for Sheldon Keefe aside in Toronto, he's a good coach. He's obviously a very good regular season coach. He knows the switches to pull there, and there's so much talent and a healthy Dougie Hamilton. You know, if Jack Hughes plays an 82 game season, I mean, the numbers that he'll post will be out of control.
Markstrom and Pesci.
Yeah. It's so many really good players. Adding Markstrom, I think Markstrom's going to have a great year in Jersey. He's a very good goalie. It's just, you know, it was messy in Calgary. But adding Pesci to the blue line, a healthy Dougie Hamilton, I love Jersey. I think Jersey's way up. It's going to be them battling with the Rangers for number one. Yeah. I think the Caps are right underneath them right now. But
yep.
But it's Jersey and the Rangers for me battling in that division.
How much higher can the Jackets go from the 66 points? They've got a new coach in Evason, a new GM in Waddell. They've got oodles of cap space, which may or may not get used. They signed Monahan. They've moved off of Line A. They still have the same goaltending. Yeah. Do they want to change the expectations within the organization?
Yeah, a full season of Adam Fantilli is going to help. Oh. I think, you know, that's a dynamite player waiting to break out. And this might be the year he gets the bust out. And everybody goes, oh, right. That's why he was up there in the draft. Still bad. Still not a playoff team, but I think they'll be better. I like this. I like the Monahan signing just because it kind of balances everything else out. They, you know, had so many questions at center, and Monahan kind of quiets that down a little bit, at least in the upper part of the lineup, but still not great. I love Zach Werenski. He's great. The rest of the defense is like, you know, I want to see David Jiříček play a whole season there as opposed to having the Amerks have to see him occasionally. Like, that's enough of that. But, there's good pieces. They're just, those pieces are really young, and it's going to take a couple more years, I think.
Well, do you know what happened last year in the Eastern Conference? We saw history in the form of the point total required for the playoffs in the wild card era. It was the lowest it has ever been. 91 points over the years. 93, 98, 96, 95, 97, 98. Skip the COVID years. 100, 92, and 91 last year. Is it going to be lower than 91 this year or higher to get in the East?
I think it's going to be higher. I know. Maybe I'm like doing the inner brain math wrong on this one, but I think there's just so many teams that are going to be ultra competitive. Yeah. I think there's going to be a few more teams into the pool this year for the wild card. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a lot of, I mean, granted, they don't play a lot of the West teams very often, but I think most of the weaker teams are in the West. Mm-hmm. The teams in the East that end up being bad are going to take their lumps really hard, which doesn't bode well for Columbus, for instance. I don't know. Maybe I'm just doing the brain math here. It feels weird to say that less than 91 can get you in the playoffs, because then the question's like, well, are these teams actually good? I don't know.
Right.
I think it's gonna be higher. Might not be that much higher, like maybe 92, 93, maybe 94 at most. But I think that's a brutal slog for everybody to try to fight to get to 94 to get in.
It was so much higher in the West, and it probably will be once again this year. But I'm still stuck in this mindset where it's so tight in the East, and some of these top teams will come down a little bit, that I think 90, 91 is once again going to be the cut line. Joe, thank you for the rapid fire assessment of the Eastern Conference today, and we'll see you very soon.
You got it, Duffer. Thanks for having me.
There's Joe Yurden. Shana Goldman is next as we continue on this Friday edition of Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Amazing. Shana Goldman is back on Friday. And once again, Marty is nowhere to be found. This is a disappointing trend for him. It's a ongoing, just amazing run for me personally, especially when we always joke about our commercial break discussions. Tell us about your enthusiasm for the new Sabrina Carpenter.
Yeah, we have to talk about positive things, because apparently me and Marty have been fighting all summer and neither of us knew it, but I feel like that's what it comes down to. But no, like, hello today. It's the release of Short and Sweet and by Sabrina Carpenter. And it is short and sweet. I know we always talk about music and different things and we get hyped about it, but like we have to get hyped about this.
Good. I haven't done my daily indulgence yet in the new music. So that's what the weekend is for. And I'm definitely looking forward to that. You jumped on and were like, what is happening? It's August 23rd. We have so much hockey news to talk about this week. I don't like being the quarterback in this situation because I don't want to throw an errant pass right out of the chute. There's so many places to start. I am also a bit of a linear thinker, but let's do it backwards. The deal from yesterday, the Winnipeg-Pittsburgh trade of top prospects, in your opinion, with Rutger McGroarty going to Pittsburgh and getting his entry-level deal. Braden Jaeger goes to Winnipeg, so the Jets are trying to sell that as, oh, Prairie boy, he's going to be happy to play in Winnipeg. It's interesting, isn't it, based on where Winnipeg and Pittsburgh are at right now? Like, the Jets are having trouble getting over that hump of being a very good team, and the Penguins are just struggling to be in the mix, which they haven't been in the last 2 years.
Yeah, it felt like for weeks this offseason, we're like dragging our feet in the cement, like what's going to happen? And then finally we get two trades we've been waiting for. It kind of feels like once the first shoe drops, what's going to happen next? And it's like general managers woke up and remembered to do their job. So we are hyped, right? Mm-hmm. The Winnipeg-Pittsburgh trade, I think, is pretty interesting because if you're the Jets, you have to package it as a win. And like it's an unfortunate situation for them, but I really liked some of the quotes that came out from McGroarty saying, like, you put on the jersey, it doesn't feel right. And I think we have to respect that. You know, I think people and fans often forget that these are human beings and you have to do what's right for you. And sometimes in the NHL, you don't get that option until you're 27 or 28. So if you can have a little bit of leverage and control your future, go off. And that meant a trade. I love this for Pittsburgh. Because if you look at the Penguins, you think of the aging core, right? And it's an elite aging core. Sidney Crosby is still playing incredible hockey. And I think Malkin's going to have a bounce back year. And you have Erik Karlsson, who did play well despite the power play struggles. And Chris Letang still there. So you have the makings of a contender if you can support them correctly. And it just feels like previous management did so much damage that they had to do so much damage control before they could actually think about even contending. Mm-hmm. So this feels like one of those moves that's actually going to push them forward and isn't just cleaning up past mistakes. It's bringing in a young, you know, good all-around forward who I think is going to look great in that top six and add some speed and skill to it. And he has a lot of patience and size. Like, he has a little bit of everything you can want in a player. I think that's so exciting for them. Add that with the fact that they brought in a new assistant coach to handle the power play because it really struggled under Todd Reirden last year. And it feels like Pittsburgh has the potential to get back into the picture as long as everyone around them isn't that much better.
Right. They only missed it by 3 points last year. Do you suspect the Jets will just still be steady as she goes based on their key pieces overall still being in place? Or does at some point it start to wear on the group, the pressure of not being able to have that postseason success?
I feel like it's got to wear on the group a little bit. And, I know I've been a big Jets hater. I feel like I'm always looking at the negatives with them because to me, sometimes they're so glaring, they're going to outweigh any positives that there are. And then last year, I finally gave them their due and they started to struggle again. So I'm a little bit worried about that. I think the fact that it's Scott Arneil instead of Bonus is a little bit different because I like that it means new assistant coach in the fold. I don't have a ton of faith in Scott Arneil as a coach, but if he's learned from previous experiences, why not see what he can do, right? The big thing here is this is a team that does really well in the regular season. And you have guys on this team that do really well in the regular season. And Ehlers and Hellebuck are two of them that always stand out to me. And then the playoffs come around. And sometimes we make too much of this, right? Like this one folds in the playoffs. Or we're just hypercritical because it's such a small sample. But year after year, you look at Hellebuck and you go, where is that greatness from the regular season in the playoffs? And same goes for Ehlers, right? Really great player, but what do you do when it matters the most? And I'm not saying the Jets' failures are on them, but they haven't done enough, I think, to bring the group up to make up for maybe their top player struggling when it matters most. Yeah. And I don't know if they've done anything to change that this year.
So another deal that happened involved Columbus, as you alluded to, much anticipated. And Montreal was pretty much in the rumor mill from the get-go. Are you surprised that it basically cost them nothing to get him?
No, because there was no salary retained. I think if there was salary retention, it's a different conversation. It wouldn't have surprised me if maybe like a change of scenery player was going back the other way. But I just think it got to the point where they said, we have to do this. It's like a make or break thing. And it's new management. You don't want to start training camp with this stuff, you know, hanging over you. So make the deal. And I think Montreal makes a lot of sense because they're aiming for those reclamation projects and they're in a position to do so. But with Columbus, it's so interesting to me. The direction they've taken over the years. And I'm really curious if it starts to change. And now that they've kind of like put a bookend on changing last year, how they can look forward. There was some really interesting reporting from Aaron Portzline about, you know, the culture there and the locker room and the players that they chose to get rid of versus the players they didn't. And here they are. So I really wonder if things are going to change now that the front office is a little bit different and, you know, it's a new coaching staff. It's a new everything. So can they finally take a step forward and turn the page on what's been a couple of really, you know, surprisingly toxic years?
Yes. And in the bigger picture, it's been really hard for the Jackets. They had good years with Tortorella, but this is the 25th anniversary season, and they've missed 18 out of the 24 years. So that's tough. And then from a fan standpoint now, you can understand a general manager and coach wanting, and perhaps rightfully so, to preach a little bit of patience. And I'm not saying that they are, but as a fan of the Jackets, you're looking at that massive amount of cap space right now and wondering if there's anything they can do in the short term to help this season before then spreading it out even further to make them better a year from now.
I feel like it's got to be just leaning on the players they view as the future, right? And it's the present talent and the future talent. If Zach Werenski can be healthy for a year, I think we all forget about just how good he is.
Oh, he's so good.
He really is. Every year we do player tiers and we're all debating where does he belong? And it's so hard to say he should be here because he can't get through a season healthy. And it's not one injury that keeps nagging him. It's just horrible luck. So you have to take all of that into consideration. Then you look at the young talent they have and maybe how they've been misused in recent years. Guys like Ken Johnson, guys like Cole Sillinger, I think could play a bigger role. And we're going to see another year of growth from Fantilli. I would focus on those players and maybe let this roster go into the season and then tweak as you need. Look at the waiver wire and see what you can do to help or minor trades before making some huge splash, because they're just not ready to do so. And I think when you jump to get that right now player, when you're not right there, we see how it burns you. And, you know, I understand why they went for Johnny Gaudreau at the time, but you look at some of the moves that they made at that moment and it felt like they were kind of speeding up the track when maybe they weren't ready to do so, and that can burn a team. So I wonder now how much they take a step back and play a more patient role, kind of similar to what the Canadians are doing, and how that can help them.
Both now are very fascinating teams to watch after completing that transaction in Montreal and Columbus. Nashville did so much work, thanks to their general manager at the start of free agency. Now, I would say perhaps unexpectedly, just because of how it was framed and the timing of it, but the insiders in the Predators organization might well have seen this coming after signing Juuse Saros to an extension, that Yaroslav Askarov isn't maybe looking glass half full at his career in Nashville. So if you're Barry Trotz and the Predators, what are you doing with this first round pick from 2020 who wants to be not only an NHLer, but presumably a number one in the very short? Is this an advantageous position for the Predators to be in?
Yeah, why not? Have a surplus at every position. I feel like every time we see a team have a glut at one position, it's like, well, you have to move on from them. Like that is, you can play that out sometimes. Sometimes you can't, right? When it's a three goalie situation, you have something bad going on, it's one thing. But you can play a patient plan and see how it shakes out because you have the area of strength. So how do you deal it? And we don't know, right? We don't know Barry Trotz's tendencies. And I love how hyped we've all been over him as a general manager because the quotes coming out, everything, you're like, this is great. And then you see how he does things, why he does it. It feels like everyone's thirsting over Barry Trotz for all the right reasons. And maybe this trade will give us another reason to, because we don't know how he's going to navigate the situation. But right now saying, hey, we expect him to start camp with us, That's the thing you have to say. What are you going to say? Yeah, we're totally trading him. You lose all leverage. So maybe no one will believe him, but you can't play it any other way at this point. I'm very curious how they handle this. I don't blame the player for wanting out, right? You look at it and go, well, I'm not going to be a starter here. But I think that if they play it calm and cool, it's going to help them as much as possible because, you know, you don't want to deal while being under pressure. You want to take your time and find the right arrangement.
Spiciest landing spot for Askarov to be a number one impactful player quickly.
It could be someone like Chicago, which, you know, if you're
you've got too much money in their crease now with Brossois and why am I
Mrazek, right?
On Mrazek, yeah.
Yeah,
they're under contract for a couple. Can they? I don't think so.
Maybe. But I feel like it should be a young up and coming team. I mean, it would be.
He needs to go to Montreal, in my opinion. I think that would be
too much. They have too many goalies. Montembeau and Primo.
So trade Primo and bring in Askarov and make it a real challenge.
You could. I kind of want to see someone like Pittsburgh. I would think it would be interesting if Pittsburgh can get involved and be like, all right, we're going to dump off Jarry somehow. I don't know how, but if they could go for it, or even like Utah would be really intriguing because
Utah was high on my list. Yes.
Yeah, like trade Vemelka and then run Ingram and Askarov. Like that could be pretty good.
And what are you hearing out of Vancouver and Demko and his reality? Because Vancouver is supposed to be good. Marty thinks they're going to win the conference. That's going to be real hard to do if Demko isn't 100%.
Yeah. I don't want to say he was their everything last year because the shooting and everything, the finishing was huge. But oh my God, is he their backbone? Oh my God, do they need him? Mm-hmm. So that's going to be really intriguing. And you have to be worried, like, what does the future hold for him? Not just the start of the season or game 20, right? It's the long term if the injuries keep popping up and if this is going to be a long term issue. So yes, they might want to be in the market for a goaltender and they need that goalie to come on the cheap, right? Because they have so much cap tied up in so many players and they have question marks like Besser's next deal to still navigate through. So it's going to be really tricky for them, but I wonder how much they're going to kind of look at what they have first and see if like Shilovs can be the real deal after that postseason run. And, you know, maybe there's a little faith in that before you drop a ton for Askarov. But I'm really curious because Vancouver, I would be a lot of bit worried right now.
Yeah, I think so too. How happy should the Hughes boys be to be on the cover of NHL 25?
They should be pumped. I mean, look, it's a little early for Luke Hughes, but you can't do just Jack and Quinn. You could have gone, I think, honestly, with just Quinn alone and everyone would have been hyped because you're coming off a season as the best defenseman in the league, right? But I think it's such a cool moment for them. And I like that they did something a little bit different with the cover. It gets a little stale and it feels like this year the game might actually be good and playable because it's been a little bland the last couple seasons.
It's a great look and it's cool. I mean, it's still amazing that two of them are on one team and it is a nice, I'm sure Vancouver fans are thrilled to have the Flying Skate as the logo of choice as well, right?
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Like that jersey flows much better than the blue and green would have, and that should be their full time for sure.
Continued success on the courts. Rumors are that you're working your way up the rankings as we approach a very critical time in the tennis season. So we'll talk to you next week, Shayna.
Thanks for having me.
Shayna Goldman from The Athletic. We're back after this on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live. Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Telling you, we have to start showing the conversations and commercial breaks on this show. Like, the excitement level is off the charts. And part of it is because we're this close to the season, right? And we're less than a month out from FanFest. It's presented by Coca-Cola Zero Sugar. It is coming up on September the 14th. And of course, it's all nicely packaged within the Prospects Challenge. But on the Saturday itself, the Sabres host FanFest. You've got hockey games and skills challenges, players' appearances, autographs, all of that. And it runs in conjunction with Hockey Fest, which is the street hockey tournament on the Saturday, the 14th at Alumni Plaza along RJ Way. It's going to be awesome. So we look forward to that. Obviously, any and all information with that event, The Prospects Challenge, you can find it at sabres.com. Happy birthday to our good friend Ray Ferraro on this day. And nice to see this little nugget from our friend Lance Lysowski at the Buffalo News saying that Justin Falk has rejoined the Sabres as a scout. Marty rejoins us on Monday at the Alumni Golf Tournament. We'll see you then.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.